ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. How you doing, Dwayne? It's Canadian Championship final day.
It is indeed. It's I'm starting to get a little excited to watch this two-legged final. I think there's a lot of intrigue with it. But as we said yesterday in Two Solitudes, which, of course, you can listen to for a donation of $2 or more a month at our Patreon, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. I think, has lacked a little buildup this year from past years. Maybe Montreal's loss on the weekend might be propelling it to a little more of an interest level.
Well, yeah, because basically that's all Montreal's got left to fight for. So tonight, the Montreal Impact will try to get the job done at home heading into the game next week, the second leg at Toronto. Of course, Montreal has a game in between in LA, and same for Toronto. Toronto's got LAFC, Montreal's got the LA Galaxy. So that's kind of interesting. It's like MLS was like, you know what? It's probably going to be Montreal-Toronto in the final. Let's both schedule at least a trip to LA so they can at least be equal on the flight aspect.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was going to say, and that actually segues into our other topic today when we're talking about the chartered flights. If it was just purely Canadian Championship, they could charter it because, of course, it's outside of Major League Soccer. But I'm guessing because they're flying from an MLS game that they would have to count it against their charters. They can't sneak that extra one in as they often did. Although it's not much of a charter when you're talking Toronto to Montreal. That is it probably saves a good hour because you wouldn't have to go through all the junk at the airport.
But there's a way. We've talked about this before, Dwayne. There's a way to do a non-charter flight here in Canada if you have money. And that's Toronto FC buying a Porter air flight, literally just all the tickets of a Porter flight, and then you kind of have a charter flight.
Yeah, you still have to work off their schedule, but you're not worried about other people there. You can sort of stretch in the aisles and do all that good stuff there without too much worry. And there's a wink going on here. The staff knows what's happening, but yeah. You also could just jump on the damn train and take 4 hours and enjoy yourself on the way down, too. That might work.
Or just drive for 5 hours and a half, depending on how quick you drive. And you're in Toronto, and you don't have to go through security at all. But it does segue to one of the topics we want to talk about. We'll review the Champions League and preview today's game in a while. We'll touch on the Canadian Championship more. But to start the show, Dwayne, let's talk about charter flights. Don Garber, I was going to call him Dwayne Garber, so your brother. Don Garber was in Vancouver during the weekend, and he talked to a few journalists, to hard journalists especially, and she wrote an article, and it does talk about charter flights and how Don Garber is not against charter flights at all. It's not his money. It just says the rules. If the players and owners agree, then yeah, he's not against charter flights. Charter flights might be a topic of conversation more than we anticipated. Well, we kind of knew it was a hill that the players would die on because it does benefit their lifestyle. It does give them a lot of hours in a day more than they would now. But with the CBA being renegotiated this offseason, charter flights might be a hill the players want to die on, and they might actually get some good progress in that resolve.
Yeah, before I jump into my opinion there, when you called Don Garber or Dwayne Garber and thought that he might be my brother, it reminded me that first off, I'd have an issue with my mother if my brother was named Dwayne as well. But it's mom's birthday today. Happy birthday, mom. She's 75 today. I've already called her. Don't worry, guys. And she's not listening. Moving on from that.
Well, happy birthday, Dwayne's mother.
Yes, Gail. Gail turned 75 today. She's having a nice steak dinner, I've heard. Anyway, moving on from that. I thought Don Garber's comments were very telling with the way that he talked to Har's question, our journalist at NBC, that he'd said yes, he was in favor of it, but he also followed it up. And you've got to always listen to what Don Garber's follow-up is when he says something.
That's true.
So the way he followed it up was he said, yeah, I'm in support of that, but you got to understand there's only a certain amount of money. And if they're using money here, that means that there could be going to have to be money taken away from there. So he's saying, yeah, we're open to negotiating this, but yeah, there's only a certain amount of pot of money there.
It's saying, what are you willing to give up to get the charter flights? It's basically what Don Garber said.
Yes, in terms of either what they have now or what they're trying to gain in the future. Is this really something that they held that they truly want to die on? And they could. If the players go in and they say, we're happy with everything else exactly the way it is, but we want charter flights, they might win that battle. They might. The owners might go, okay, we're not going to raise the cap as much as we have in the past. We're not going to add any TAM spots, but
Free agency is not going to be made easier. It's still going to have weird, convoluted rules, but okay, you can get your charter flights.
Yeah, because we'll save that money from elsewhere. So that's ultimately when I read that. Like, the headline is Don Garber in favor of charter flights, but when you read it carefully, what it really says is Don Garber says, you want to fight? You want to go?
Let's go. Oh, we're probably going to have a fight this offseason, and we'll talk a lot on soccer today. It will be our topic in this offseason. And it's kind of interesting that the comments of Wayne Rooney yesterday, too. Wayne Rooney saying, American players in Major League Soccer are not paid enough when you look at other sports leagues in North America, and they should be paid more. Kind of got a point. Remember Alan Gordon back in the Beckham days? It's just an example. Things have changed, and players are paid more. And the average salary, I don't think, is a good indication. I don't think it's a good indicator of the salary in Major League Soccer, but the median is, and the median is closer to 100,000 than 55. So I think it does have validity, the comments of Dwayne Rooney. Why am I calling everyone Dwayne today?
Wayne and Dwayne's a little closer than Don and Dwayne, but go ahead.
So Wayne Rooney saying American players should be paid more. He has a point.
Well, of course he does. Yeah. You mentioned the Beckham experiment. I actually want to track the book down. It's 10th anniversary this year. Of course, it details 2008, so it's really 11 years ago that it talks about. But it really would be a telling read right now to compare it to the current times. And it was vastly different. I mean, even the time frame between when TFC came in the league and when Montreal and Vancouver came in the league in those 2 years, there's a lot of change in those 5 years, and then it's been like dramatically every year since. As you say, back then there were still players that were making $12,500 a year. I don't know if Alan Gordon was that low, but he was living on his girlfriend's couch, if I recall from the book. So
yeah, exactly.
He was now his wife. She was a nurse, so she could afford his lifestyle, basically. But that's not how you'd really anticipate that, and that was the point of the book at the time. It'd be interesting to have a follow-up on it in some way. I don't know what you'd call it. The Beckham effect, maybe, instead of the Beckham experiment, you'd call it.
Stop talking and call a publicist, will you? Because that's pretty good.
Exactly. So there you go. Yeah, they do need to be paid more in relation when you look at there's people that are pure capitalists out there, that are pure free market guys that are probably disagreeing with us right now when we say this. But what I'd say to them is, when you look at someone selling a franchise for $200 million, then obviously the valuation of those franchises is such that there needs to be a compensation that reflects that a little bit more than it does now. There should not still be players in Major League Soccer that make less money than me. That should not be happening. There's a ton, to be fair, but there's some still, and that's not okay, I think.
Well, that's right, because 55, well, it was 55 last year and the year before, so we'll see how much it is next year. Well, that's the basic salary.
That's $1,600 biweekly. Like, think about that for a minute.
Yeah, if you live in Toronto, if you're a Toronto FC player, you can barely pay rent. So there you go.
Yeah, you're living with someone else. So it's a challenge. And look, it's the compensation stuff, I think, for a lot of players. This is always the problem when you're talking about a CBA, and I'm pro-union, for the record. I'm pro-player and unapologetically. But when you're talking about CBAs, when it comes to sports leagues, often who gets railroaded by them are the players that are coming in, or the very young players in favor of the older players. So I I think that this charter flight issue will be something, because I think the older players really do want it, because they're sick of losing half their life and missing time with their kids and their wives and things like that. That's a big part of it too, not just the training aspect. They use the training aspect to make a point, but you know, it's as much about like little junior saying, "Who's you?"
Well, when dad
walks home.
The difference between arriving at home at, like, example, 7 p.m. versus 11 p.m. The 4 hours is how a charter flight gets you home a lot quicker.
Yeah, exactly. And you're losing valuable family time. And I think we all understand that on some level, right? I mean, you're, of course, my mother, happy birthday today. We all understand family's important to everything, right?
Well, you're an athlete. You're going to need your sleep. You're going to need to eat. So what's the only expendable time you have? And it's unfortunate, but it's your family. And that's a decision. Yeah. That's a decision-making process no parent wants to take. It's like, yeah, I need to not see my kid because I need to sleep because I got a game tonight.
And this is why it's a bigger issue for older players. They do need that recovery time. They do have families where if you're 20 or 21...
You don't even need to recover. What's that? What's recovery?
Yeah, you're on plan Fortnite anyway, right? Like, it doesn't really matter to you.
I don't know if they're still playing Fortnite. But playing something, FIFA's coming out soon. But the same vein, though, you mentioned CBA, Dwayne. That's something we've seen a lot. Until we have superstars willing to sacrifice their own benefit to benefit the younger, or not necessarily younger, but players with a lesser profile in Major League Soccer, is when the players' union will truly make a gain in this sport, in this league. If you look at all the other leagues in North America, the sports league, Dwayne, there's one that is actually using their players more than any other, and it's the NBA. The NBA realized that the core of their league is, it's not the sport, it's not the basket, it's not the logo, it's the players, and it's been thriving over the last 10 years. And that's because players like LeBron James were willing to sacrifice their own pockets for the benefit of everyone. And until we have that one big profile player, like, it's not going to be Zlatan who sacrifices himself for the rest of
the greatest player in MLS history, you mean?
Yeah, he's not going to strike to make sure that the kid who's
Alan Gordon,
I was trying to find, he's not gonna like sacrifice for Michael Petrasso to get a better contract, you know? No. I know he's not in the Canadian Premier League anymore. He's not in the MLS anymore. But what I mean is, I don't see Zlatan as being the LeBron James. And I don't know if there is one in Major League Soccer right now willing to take a big stand with the players and truly show a labor type of leadership for the players.
You'd have to be looking in terms of a DP that might be like a Michael Bradley. Someone, I'm not just saying that because I'm in Toronto. It's just the type of player that might be there. But does Michael Bradley have enough of a profile and pull to really have an impact beyond his own market, right, at this point? So that's a tough question right there. You don't have the global stature of the NBA. That's the only thing I'd say to that. Like, you know, LeBron, there is no LeBron James in Major League Soccer. Well, there might be. I mean, Zlatan is a LeBron James of a type, but he's a LeBron James with a cane.
He's a LeBron James, but there's more than one, so it doesn't have the same. But it's just an idea. I know that in regular work stoppages or regular collective bargaining agreement negotiations, the aspect of having leverage is important, and it's hard to imagine leverage on the player's side without having the big names, big money players being on the player's side taking a stand.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, the one thing I will say is, if you look at the history of work stoppages within the major sports, it is hard to remember any that really turned out favorably for the players, because the owners always have the financial advantages. It's billionaires versus millionaires.
The house always wins.
Yeah, and the billionaires have enough time to grind it out. Even in the NBA's case, you look at their last lineup or their last lockout, they ended up losing some of their rights. But what has happened in the NBA since then is that Adam Silver and the new leadership of the NBA sort of got a little younger, a little more progressive, and decided that working with their athletes rather than against them in an adversarial way, which is what you see a lot in the NFL in particular. And MLS takes probably its biggest hints from the NFL, so I don't have a lot of hope here.
There's a few owners that are one and the same because they own NFL teams. Like Kraft and Blank and Hunt.
And they look at it much differently than the NBA owners. See, they don't even call them owners in the NBA. They're partners or they're investors or they use terms like this in purpose. And there's a lot of reasons for that that aren't just about, you know, business. There's a lot of sort of cultural reasons because of the demographics of the NBA that they don't want to use owners and, you know, owned players when you're talking about that. Think about it historically, folks, if you're not getting my reference here. It's something that they did, and it does change a reflection in how that league is perceived by both the players and the owners and the fans now. And it's why I think when you look at that partnership, NBA has really become probably the second biggest league in the world. I mean, the NFL folks will argue against that, and maybe in pure numbers they might be right, but in terms of exposure are in the world and not just in a very small part of the world, I think that they're probably clearly just behind the Premier League in terms of where they are. I'm not saying MLS can get close to anywhere there, but I think there does have to be a greater degree of partnership between the league and the players than we've seen in the past for this league to truly grow and break through to the next level. And this whole battle about charters really does not reflect well on that. It doesn't seem like that's what's about to happen.
No, it shouldn't be a battle. It should be like, yeah, charter flights are going to be standard from now on, and we don't want to make an issue out of it. We think our players deserve better. That should be what I would like to hear, but I guess I'm a bit more pro-labor or pro-player, and I'll probably never hear these words coming out of the mouth of Don Garber.
Well, no, and you know, Don Garber's a very great scapegoat for all of us, players and owners alike, right? Because he has to play the middle ground in a lot of ways. He is an employee of the owners. I think we all understand that on some level, but we still ultimately review him as, well, because he is the mouthpiece of them, and he is going to speak whatever their viewpoints are. And that's why we haven't seen, you know, him not going, you know, you're right, we're going to try and resolve that in the next CBA. Not, he didn't say that. It sounded like he said that. He said, yeah, you're right, but what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to give up for us to give you this? Because there's only this much.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. But it's a famous but.
You're going to pay for it? That's essentially what you're saying.
Exactly. Which is it's a good way. Anyways, we'll keep an eye on Charter Flights. It's an important article. Hardjournalist.wordpress.com. You can find the article by Hard Journalist, and it's a good follow if you're on Twitter. I suggest a follow, Hard Journalist. She does great work coming from Vancouver Champions League yesterday. Dwayne, a couple of games. Couple of bad results. Well, one bad result, but I'm not going to talk about the game at Stamford Bridge versus Valencia. Inter Milan 1, Slavia Prague 1, Lyon's in it 1-1. Red Bull 6 for Jesse Marsh versus Genk 2. Jesse Marsh, first American coach not only to manage a game in the group stage of the Champions League, but to win one.
Yeah, well, let's keep in mind that Genk's best player for the game of the Champions League is currently preparing to play for the Canadian Championship tonight. So that probably affected their ability to compete against a very good Salzburg team. But historic.
Oh, are you saying that Genk's best player was Pozuelo last year?
He was the best player in the league by vote. So I don't think there's many doubt about this. That's why they were so angry when TFC took him from them. Anyway. The Belgian league is what it is. It's a very entertaining league, but I don't think anyone expected much from that. 6 is a big number to put on there, but I do think Salzburg's a pretty decent side that is built within a very effective organization in Red Bull that is firing on all cylinders, save the one in New Jersey right now, by the looks of it.
Yeah, Leipzig 2-1 against Benfica. I guess the identity is very clear everywhere else but Red Bull Arena in New Jersey. Liverpool 0 on the road to Napoli. Napoli 2. 2-0 win against Liverpool. 3-0 Ajax versus Lusk. The Dutch team beating the French team 3-0. And the game that got a lot of people's attention might not have seen a score, but it might have been the most entertaining 0-0 game I have seen. It was a chaotic 0-0. It's hard to imagine a chaotic 0-0 and a pressure-filled 0-0. Dortmund-Barcelona was a pressure-filled 0-0.
Well, it certainly was the game that I chose to watch, and how could you not with those two names? That is a matchup you could see in the final. Although, in fairness, Liverpool-Napoli is a pretty decent matchup as well. Look, a 0-0, that is one of those results in this particular game that's probably not going to satisfy either side of this, particularly Barcelona's start to the season, which continues to be a bit sputtering for them. They're not really firing on all cylinders, but at the same time, I don't think anyone's particularly worried because they can look at the injuries, they can look at the fact that they didn't add the big name that they wanted to add, and I don't know whether that's a positive or a negative. I tend to view the latter, but anyway, there's a lot of Neymar fans out there, so we'll see what happens with that in January.
There's a lot of Neymar fans. We don't have to be ones. We can leave it to other.
He's aiming more towards Balotelli than he is towards Messi at this point in his career, I have to say.
Just a very well-paid Balotelli.
Yeah, precisely. Balotelli made okay money. In terms of Liverpool-Napoli, the other game you mentioned there, look, if you're Liverpool, I think that they view the success they've had in knockouts, that all they want to do is ensure that they get to the round of 16. I don't think they're overly worried about that. Pretty excited by the five-point gap they have in the league, and they probably believe that they can put all the marbles in towards the end of the group stage to make sure that they find a way in the final 16, and then they have the experience 2 years in a row going to a final. So I don't think any Liverpool fans is overly worried about losing that one on the road.
No, I don't think so either. And it's the Champions League, and it's going to happen. 8 games today as well. Club Brugge versus Galatasaray. Club Brugge just sounds like a club from 1999 with a lot of ecstasy in it, or a type of bad movie with like Colin Farrell in a video or something. I don't know. Every time I see Club Brugge, I imagine just either a terrible nightclub or a bad VHS movie.
Club Brugge.
Exactly.
Anyway.
That's what it sounds like to me. They're playing at 1 p.m. today versus Galatasaray. Olympiakos, Tottenham, Bayer Leverkusen, Lokomotiv Moscow, PSG, Real Madrid. What a game. Day 2 of the Champions League. You have PSG, Real Madrid. It's not even the biggest game today. Bayern and Milan Boyan, we're going to call it that because it's easier to say, Red Star Belgrade versus Bayern Munich. Atletico Madrid, Juventus. Jeez, who makes the schedule? What am I supposed to do? Watch both at the same time?
Well, and of course, I'll be watching one you're going to say next. But yeah.
How? I think I've seen this matchup 5 times in the last 5 years. How come they're always playing the damn Shakhtar Donetsk, Man City? Feels like they're always playing each other. Or maybe I'm mistaken, Chelsea facing Shakhtar Donetsk. I don't know.
Well, City has been fortunate enough to get a fairly soft draw the last couple of years. Before that, they had a pretty tough draw, so it evens out over the long period of time. And, you know, conspiracy theorists can say what they wish. But, look, Shakhtar's a tricky little draw, but this is by far sexy. Far from sexy is what I'm trying to say. It is only partisanship that is going to put me in this angle. I have not yet even decided whether I'm going to bother to watch this with people or whether I'm just going to put 2 screens on. We'll see how I feel this afternoon, how much work I get done before then, basically.
We have to eventually take a closer eye at Donetsk, because it's a club without a home right now, right? They're playing away from their usual home because of political reasons. And, well, Donetsk is in Crimea, in Ukraine. Just go back to what happened with Russia a couple of years ago. And you understand that this team and the political aspect of this team is quite complicated. Last game today in the Champions League, Dinamo Zagreb versus Atalanta. But, geez, PSG, Real Madrid, Atletico, Juventus, talking about what could be finals. Like, these could be finals, but they are the first game in group stage.
Yeah, Atleti, I think, is the one team that in Europe of the, what would you call it, like, at this point in time? Have they been good long enough that you can start to call them part of the Tier 1 teams, or are they still a high Tier 2 team? I think they're kind of a high Tier 2 team.
Okay, you say Tier 2, I say Tier 1, because is Chelsea Tier 1 this year? No. Not so well. There's space in that Tier 1 bubble. Atleti, welcome to the club.
Yeah, certainly them and Dortmund would have very strong arguments for having broken through into the very elite in the past couple of years. Both have, of course, lost finals to 2 finals in Atleti's case, and I wouldn't count against them the way that they've started and retooled in the offseason team, although they lost last weekend in La Liga. But La Liga is a funny little beast this year. Yeah, that's a decent matchup, and I would choose, if I had to choose one, a second screen, and I, like I said, I probably will choose a second screen. I likely would go that way. Juve is very fascinating too. So it's lots of fun ones this way. I just don't want to watch Real Madrid PSG. Someone has to win it, and that's sad, really.
It's the Qatari Derby. Who's going to lose is the question.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's fascinating in its own weird way, but yeah, it's they're teams that if you don't love them, you hate them, and it's kind of, if you're neutral, hard to watch that one in a lot of ways. I never really had an issue with PSG, because I don't have an issue with Nouvelle Rich teams, as you might expect.
I wonder why.
I mean, look, we could have a whole argument with this in another day. There's a little gatekeeping that takes place in some of the attitudes towards the Nouvelle Rich teams, but PSG has not really inspired since they got the money. I would argue
they were better before. I liked them when Ibra was there and Cavani. I thought they were dangerous back then, and they didn't need to spend $800 million in transfers.
Yeah, I mean, what City has done with the money has inarguably been very successful and very compelling from a pure entertaining standpoint. You can disagree with, you know, who the owner is and all that sort of stuff. It's a different discussion. But what they've done is they've absolutely became the team that everyone thought that they would with the money. I'm not sure PSG has. And that's maybe the interesting story with them. And it could be the league difference. It could be that they're not pushed at all domestically. And that has regressed them a little bit. I don't know. It's a debate I think a lot of people have been having in a lot of different places for a long time now. So I don't know how much more we can add to it other than to say,
yeah, we're not watching that game.
Yeah. Yeah, they leave me flat. Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on the Champions League games and talk about them tomorrow. But tonight, we are going to be, well, I am going to be at Sazapucho for the first leg in the Canadian Championship, and probably in Toronto next Wednesday. I'll do a little flash trip, Dwayne. Hopefully I get the chance to see you, but I will see if it's possible, because I'm going to arrive like in the afternoon and leaving right after the game. But it is a final. It is a trophy. It's the Voyagers Cup. Up for grabs. Game number one tonight. Of course, for the Impact, they're limping into this final with not a lot of confidence. For Toronto, having lost since August 6th, I think. So, two teams with two different paths to a final, at least for the confidence. How important is confidence, though, heading into an isolated incident that a final is?
Yeah, it's two legs, which I think is a bit different. Of course, this will be the only time that we really see two MLS teams, well, be literally the only time we see two MLS teams play in a two-leg series this year, because obviously Vancouver decided to do you-know-what in the bed against Calgary to avoid that happening in the semifinal.
And the Champions League is only next spring, so for this year, it's the last home-and-away series for MLS teams in 2019.
Yeah. And that's interesting on its own, and I do think that probably helps. It helps Montreal a little bit, because I do believe that, you know, because they can sort of put all their eggs in the basket here, I think Montreal fans have given up on the MLS season already anyway. The fact that they're on the road this weekend will allow them to maybe, if they were to slip up there and be eliminated, at least they're not getting, you know, booed off the field, which is what would happen if they were at home. Whereas if they were to do a similar thing to the bed in Montreal that Vancouver did tonight against Toronto, then, you know, as we said yesterday, all hell's going to break loose and it's not going to be fun. So I do think that they're going to push that, and they can potentially put something on the board tonight that will make Toronto think twice about how they approach the second leg. As you say, Toronto's been pretty good. They still have had similar vulnerabilities in terms of the season. They've just figured out how to – what Toronto has done since the start of August is they figured out how to play – either this way or that way, but not in the between. Which what I mean is they could either put their foot on the front gas and be really dangerous looking, but then they're vulnerable at the back, or they can be defensively responsible and not be able to produce. They've been able to get a lot of draws with that and keep in touch and eventually get the wins against the teams that you would expect to put them in the position now where they have all but clinched the playoff spot, which is what their goal was. But they're still a vulnerable team at the back, and I think if Montreal can assume that maybe they can find a goal at BMO, if they put TFC in under pressure to need to score at BMO, then Montreal will feel confident they can score. That's what I'm trying to say. Well, so I give the Impact a chance.
Kind of hoping just to see a goal at Stade Saputo. It's been two games since I've seen the Impact score at home against opposition that were up for the taking. DC United and Cincinnati. It's been a while. It's been over 2 weeks and a half because of the international break. Yeah. It's been a long time since the Impact scored. Hopefully they have one in them for tonight, but hopefully for Toronto too. I don't see a lot of the last two games really helping Montreal, but I guess that's when we need to see if it's true that you can forget and that players can have a short memory and that players and coaches can just switch on a dime and turn it on when it actually matters. We'll see if all those hypotheses become a reality tonight.
I'm not going to lie and sugarcoat this for our Montreal friends and listeners, Kevin. I don't give the Impact much of a chance to win this series. I think there are two teams going in the opposite direction. But I did explain how they could. And I do think as a TF, you're a TFC supporter, you go into tonight just hoping that the Impact don't get a couple goal lead on you, don't force you to be offensive on that second leg. Because the alternative to that, obviously, is that TFC goes out, scores a couple road goals, and then the Impact are like going to throw their arms in the air.
Like, okay, what do you want us to do now? Just cancel the game next week. Well, what's the point? Yeah, we'll see. But tonight, we're going to cover the Canadian Championship Final. Of course, on tomorrow's show, we'll have more, and on next week's Two Solitudes podcast as well. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Laramie and this show at Soccer Today SPN live Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, the world of football with a soccer perspective. If you like what we do and you like to hear Dwayne and I talk more about Canadian soccer and eventually more premium content, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Yesterday's show, Dwayne and I talked about Carmelina Moscato being named League One Ontario Commissioner on the women's side and working with the Canadian Premier League as well. We've talked about the Canadian Championship. We've talked about the Canadian Premier League. So make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the exclusive show and also will give you a premium RSS URL that you can add to your favorite podcatcher to get this premium podcast on your favorite podcast application. Until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.